Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am currently in Genesis chapter 35. I'm going to cover verses 16 through 29, which tells us about the deaths of Rachel and Isaac. Our context is this: in the first half of chapter 35, we see Jacob revisiting Bethel after he had left Shechem, and we see God there confirming God's renaming of Jacob to Israel. So we start now in Genesis 35, verses 16 through 18. Then they journeyed from Bethel, that's Jacob and his family, journeyed from Bethel, and when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath, Rachel began to give birth, and she suffered severe labor. When she was in severe labor, the midwife said to her, "Do not fear, for now you have another son." It came about, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she named him Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. All right, now Jacob's family is going to move from Bethel and go on down to Bethlehem on the way to Hebron, is where they eventually end up. And the first question we want to ask ourselves is, why did they ever leave Bethel? Here's what one of my commentators says, quote, "There can be no doubt that much enjoyment was experienced at Bethel and that in the religious observances solemnized, as well as in the vivid recollections of the glorious vision seen there," that's Jacob's ladder, "the affections of the patriarch were powerfully animated, and that he left the place a better and more devoted servant of God." Well, yeah, Bethel was a good place, but he left it anyway. Could be he was going to see his father in Beersheba. If you look at the road that runs right down the middle of Israel there, starting at Bethel, which is about, 6 miles or so south of, north of Jerusalem, you go from Bethel, then you go to Ramah, then you go to Jerusalem, then you go to Bethlehem, then you go to Hebron. And Jacob knows Isaac's old, about to die. The next stop on the road after Hebron is Beersheba. It bends a little bit to the west, but it's still the same road. Another 10 miles or so, and you're in Beersheba. Maybe that's what he was doing, going down there to see Isaac before he died. But at any rate, for whatever reason, he left Bethel. And when there was still some distance to go to Ephrath, Ephrath is the older name for Bethlehem. Ephrath, according to John Gill, was 12 miles south of Bethel. Bethlehem was 12 miles south of Bethel. Rachel began to give birth, and she suffered severe labor. Now, perhaps this severe labor was brought on by the travel. I wonder, did the ancients not know that travel exacerbated pregnancies? I mean, I know in the modern age, don't you travel when you're within a month of pregnancy or whatever it was. I forgot, with my three kids, we couldn't go anywhere because of travel. You certainly didn't ride a horse, you didn't ride a donkey, didn't ride a mule, but Rachel did. So you wonder, why in the world did Jacob set out with Rachel when she was pregnant like that? Maybe he was worried about Isaac dying. Maybe he didn't understand that you don't ride pregnant women on the back of a donkey, but I can't believe that he wouldn't know something like that, even though he was an ancient. I would think that even ancient people knew that. But at any rate, for whatever reason, she suffered severe labor, which was perhaps brought on by the travel. And the midwife told her, and that midwife, by the way, was probably there because she was probably brought along with the traveling family just in case Rachel began to give birth, which means that Jacob would have known that Rachel was about to give birth and put her on the donkey anyway, and off they went. So I don't really understand that, but at any rate, the midwife was there, and she said, "Don't be afraid, because now you have another son." The midwife was probably consciously reflecting what Rachel had pled for earlier. In Genesis 30, verse 24, after she gave birth to Joseph, we read this: "She named him Joseph," her son Joseph, "saying, 'May the Lord give me another son.'" Joseph means he will add, addition. "I want another son." Well, here the another son came. Benjamin, Benoni, also known as Benjamin, was born. And so that midwife was probably familiar with Rachel's earlier desire to have another son. So she named her first son Joseph. And the midwife said, "You got it. Don't worry. You've got another son. Do not fear." Well, she had something to fear. She was dying. It's really sad, really. "As a soul was departing," John Gill makes a theological point here. This is proof of an immortal spirit in man. Her body didn't depart, but her soul did. As her soul was departing, it left. That shows that the soul and the body are separate and distinct, because the body stayed, but the soul left. John Gill also says that as she died doing what she wanted to do most, which was get to give birth to children. I love it how people say that, "Oh, he died. He was hang gliding. He died doing what he loved to do the most." I think that's cold comfort, to be perfectly honest with you. But people say that all the time. Alive people. So, but at any rate, she did do what she wanted to do most, which is to have another child, but she died in childbirth doing it. She gave her son's name the name of Benoni, which means son of my trouble. I assume the trouble is the difficult labor that was about to kill her. And I'm sure Jacob didn't want to call his 12th son of my trouble, and that's why he changed his name to Benjamin, which means son of my right hand, according to the NIV note. Now, what does that mean? It means that Benjamin is going to support him in his old age. Son of my right hand, support me in my old age. But it can also mean son of the south, because all the other sons were born in the north, and Padan Aram, which is in the northeast of Israel. And Jacob says, okay, but this one's born here down near Bethlehem, so we're going to call this son of the south, south of Syria. We go now to Genesis 35, verses 19 and 20. So Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Jacob set up a pillar over her grave. That is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. Now, Rachel died. Well, I'm going to show you in just a minute more precisely where she died. But first of all, let's point out that her death here was used twice in the scriptures as a metaphor for sad events in Israel's history. She is twice poetically pictured as rising and weeping for slaughtered people, even as she wept for her son, or wept because she was saying goodbye to her son as she died. The first instance of this is in Jeremiah 31:15. Thus says the Lord, a voice is heard in Ramah. Now, Ramah is just north of Jerusalem. Thus says the Lord, a voice is heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping. Rachel is weeping for her children. She refuses to be comforted for her children because they are no more. Now, this is poetic. Rachel is weeping. She's crying, just as she's crying here. But here, let's point out the difference. As Benjamin is born, Rachel is not weeping that her child is going to die or be slaughtered. She's weeping because she's going to lose. She's going to die. So this is only loosely used. This incident of Rachel dying is only loosely used by Jeremiah. And what Jeremiah is referring to is that the staging for the deportation of the Israeli exiles who were carried by Babylon from Israel to Babylon, that staging area was in Ramah. That's where the Israelites were carried and processed and bound and so forth and shipped on out to Babylon. And so Jeremiah refers to that in Jeremiah 31:15. And in Matthew 2:18, we see that Matthew quotes Jeremiah 31:15, the exact same verse. It's a word-for-word quote. A voice was heard in Ramah, weeping a great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children, and she refused to be comforted because they were no more. Now here, Matthew refers to Herod's slaughter of the innocents when Herod decided he was going to kill all the babies in Bethlehem that were 2 years old and under, hoping to kill the Messiah by doing that. Since he didn't know which one of those babies was going to be the Messiah, he'd just kill them all. And so Matthew refers to this prophecy in Jeremiah. And so Matthew refers to Rachel weeping. Jeremiah refers to Rachel weeping. But it's not at the exact same place. As a matter of fact, when Matthew quotes it, the voice heard in Ramah, that's just an incidental detail. People weren't crying in Ramah. They were crying in Bethlehem, which was near Ramah, but it wasn't particularly Ramah. So we need to be careful about being too tight on the fulfillment of these prophecies. Now, Rachel died and was buried on the way to Bethlehem. The death, even though Jeremiah poetically places the death of Benjamin at Ramah, which is on the way to Bethlehem, but actually the death was at Zelzah. And we know that by reading 1 Samuel 10:2. When you go for me today, then you will find two men close to Rachel's tomb in the territory of Benjamin at Zelzah. Rachel's tomb in the territory of Benjamin at Zelzah. And if you get the map, BibleAtlas.org, you'll see that Zelzah is about 1 mile to the northwest of Bethlehem, which is not far from Ramah, but it still is Zelzah to be more precise. Samuel was writing, his birth dates were about from 1056 to 1004. We're now in the 1800s with Jacob, so that was a good while later. So that tomb was still around there after all those years. We go now to Genesis 35, verse 21. Then Israel journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. Now here we see Jacob referred to as Israel. Remember, God had given him a new name when he wrestled with Jacob at the river Jabbok, and then he reconfirmed that new name at Bethel when Jacob came back to Bethel the second time. This is the first time that Moses, in writing the account, refers to Jacob as Israel. I don't know why he didn't call Israel back in verse 14 of this chapter, where Moses says, Jacob set up a marker at the place where he had spoken to him, a stone marker. That's talking about where Jacob had had the vision of Jacob's ladder. I don't know why. That's a mystery to me. But he's called Israel here. He journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. The NIV has Migdal Eder, Migdal's Tower in Hebrew. Eder is the name. And it doubtless refers to a tower that kept thieves from stealing sheep. Here's some options for its location. Between Bethlehem and Hebron, which would be slightly south of Bethlehem, would be Migdal Eder. This is BibleAtlas.org. John Gill sort of agrees. He says about a mile from Jerusalem to the south. Jerome is a little bit more imprecise. He says about a mile from Jerusalem. And there was an old tradition that says it was between Bethel and Bethlehem, which would put Migdal Eder to the north. We're going to go with about a mile to the south of Bethlehem. So that's where Jacob, also known as Israel, is now camped. Some people say that this must be where the shepherds were watching their flocks in the famous Christmas story, Luke 2:8. In the same region, there were some shepherds staying out in the fields and keeping watch over their flock by night. There's an interesting prophecy in Micah 4:8 that says this, "As for you, tower of the flock," tower is Migdal, "tower of the flock," watchtower that looks over the flock, "as for you, tower of the flock, hill of the daughter of Zion," Mount Zion, hill of the daughter of Zion is Mount Zion, which of course is the typical standard symbol or type for the New Testament church. And it says, "For you, tower of the flock, to you it will come, even the former dominion will come, the kingdom of the daughter of Jerusalem." In other words, the kingdom of God, which is symbolized by Old Testament Zion, that kingdom of God will be the New Testament church, and Zion, which symbolizes the New Testament church, will be called Tower of the Flock, a tower which protects the flock. And the flock, of course, are sheep. And we are the sheep. We're the Christian sheep. And Mount Zion is going to be a tower that looks after us and protects us. We go to Genesis 35, verse 22. "It came about while Israel was dwelling in that land," this is Jacob, not the nation of Israel, but the person Israel, Jacob, "was dwelling in that land, that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine. And Israel heard of it," that's Jacob, "heard of it." Now there were 12 sons of Jacob. It's funny, I wonder why Moses didn't say they were 12 sons of Israel. He said there's 12 sons of Jacob. He's using the name back and forth here. Now, think about that. Jacob has just lost his beloved wife, Rachel. He's got Bilhah, his concubine, Rachel's maid. I guess that would be consolation. And the first thing that happens while he's there at Migdal Eder, while he's there, his concubine gets slept with by his oldest son. Now, that's incest, if I've ever heard it. The NIV Study Bible also says it was an arrogant and premature claim of the firstborn to inherit his deceased father's concubine. Now, Reuben would have inherited Bilhah when Jacob died, but he decides he wants to take over now. Can't wait. Well, this was a stupid move. This was a bad career move on the part of Reuben. He lost his rights of the firstborn. We read in Genesis 49, 3 through 4. This is when Jacob is down there in Egypt. He's given his blessing to the 12 tribes. And he said, "Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might and the beginning of my strength, preeminent in dignity and preeminent in power." That's because he was the firstborn. Firstborn gets the right of primogeniture, double inheritance. But that's not what happened to Reuben. Jacob continues, "Uncontrolled as water, you shall not have preeminence because you went up to your father's bed. Then you defiled it. He went up to my couch." Sounds like Jacob was really ticked off by that, as you can imagine. We read in 1 Chronicles 5:1 concerning Reuben. "Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but because he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, so that he," Reuben, "is not enrolled in the genealogy according to the birthright." So Reuben lost his birthright, even as Esau lost his birthright. God is not so much concerned about natural pecking orders. As I said, this was a double grief for Jacob. Rachel had just died, and Jacob probably abstained from Bilhah afterwards. He probably didn't want to sleep with her anymore, knowing that his son had slept with her. I don't know. And of course, that's another thing, too. How much did Bilhah go along with this? Don't we wish we could know, but we don't. Now, let's look at Reuben's fall from leadership, and as we look at this, we will use this as an object lesson of how to screw up your ability to lead, how to lose leadership. At first, Reuben was a leader. He played the part of the firstborn. In Genesis 30, verses 14 through 17, he brought mandrakes to Leah so Leah could buy Jacob away from Rachel for a night. Now, of course, he might have been a little boy then, just playing with him, but he was trying to help his mama out, Leah. But now, after the incest with Bilhah, he was not respected as the firstborn. And we see this, for example, when Joseph was caught by the Midianite, while his brothers caught him and were thinking about selling him down to Egypt. Reuben didn't like that idea, so he says in Genesis 37, 21 and 22, when Reuben heard this, he tried to save Joseph from them, from his brothers. He said, let's not take his life. Reuben also said to them, don't shed blood, throw him into this pit in the wilderness, but don't lay a hand on him, intending to rescue him from them and return him to his father. Now that's good that he was trying to save Joseph, but his brothers didn't listen to him. And later on, when Jacob is in the promised land in Canaan, and Joseph is in Egypt, in exile in Egypt, and he wants to see Benjamin. And so Joseph has told the sons to get Benjamin on back down here. So we see Reuben trying to get Jacob to agree to that, Genesis 42, verses 37 and 38. Then Reuben said to his father, you could kill my two sons if I don't bring him back to you, bring Benjamin back to you from Egypt. Put Benjamin in my care, and I will return him to you. But Jacob answered, my son will not go down with you, for his brother is dead. That's Joseph. He thought he was dead. He wasn't. For his brother is dead, and he alone is left. Benjamin alone is left. If anything happens to him on your journey, you will bring my gray hairs down to Sheol in sorrow. So Jacob didn't listen to Reuben. I think he'd had it with Reuben. That's it. I don't care what you say, Reuben. I'm not listening to you. I'm not letting you take Benjamin back to Egypt. Now, what happened? After the leadership of the patriarchs passed away from Reuben, it went to Judah, who was the fourth child of Leah, the fourth child of Jacob. Genesis 37, verses 26 and 27. Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it of us to kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come and let us sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him, for he is our brother and our own flesh. And his brothers listened to him. They were listening to Judah. They weren't listening to Reuben. So Judah was the one that talked the brothers into doing what he wanted, which was to sell him, not put him in a pit like Reuben wanted. Genesis 43, verses 3 through 5. Judah spoke to Jacob, however, saying, the man solemnly warned us, you shall not see my face unless your brother is with you. This is Judah going back to talk to Jacob in the promised land and said, look, we got to have Benjamin down here in Egypt. If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. So said Joseph to the brothers. Judah is speaking now, relating this to Jacob. But if you do not send him, we will not go down, for the man said to us, you will not see my face unless your brother is with you. So Judah is now handling that situation, not Reuben. Judah continues a few verses later in Genesis 43, 8 through 10. Judah said to his father Israel, send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever. If we had not delayed, surely by now we could have returned twice. So now we see Judah dealing with his father Jacob, his father Israel, saying, we got to take Benjamin back to Egypt. So Judah got the job done. Reuben did not. Now, down in Egypt, we see in the next chapter in Genesis, Genesis 44, 16, Judah leads the negotiations with Joseph. Not Reuben, but Judah. What can we say to my Lord? Genesis 44, 16. What can we say to my Lord? Judah replied, meaning his Lord, Joseph. How can we plead? How can we justify ourselves? God has exposed your servant's iniquity. That's when they found the planted cups in the grain bags. It was Judah doing the talking with Joseph. We go to two chapters later in Genesis 46, 28. Now he, that's Jacob, sent Judah before him to Joseph to point out the way before him to Goshen. And they came into the land of Goshen. So Jacob has now put Judah in charge to point out the way to get back to Egypt. Genesis 49, verses 8 through 12. This is doing the famous blessing of Jacob at the end of his life. Judah, your brothers shall praise you. Remember, Judah means praise. Your hand shall be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons shall bow down to you. Judah is a lion's whelp. From the prey, my son, you have gone up. He couches, he lies down as a lion, and as a lion, who dares rouse him up? The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until Shiloh comes as the Messiah, and to him shall be the obedience of the peoples. He ties his foal to the vine and his donkey's colt to the choice vine. He washes his garments in wine and his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes are dull from wine and his teeth white from milk. In other words, Judah's going to be the top dog. And that's how the the Messiah came to be called the Lion of Judah and not the Lion of Reuben. 1 Chronicles 5:2, though Judah prevailed over his brothers and from him came the leader, yet the birthright belonged to Joseph. From him came the leader. I'm not sure who the leader is there. I think that's referring to the Messiah. But 1 Chronicles 5:2 says Judah prevailed over his brothers. So there we have the downfall of Reuben because he had sex with his father's concubine, and the elevation of Judah to patriarchal leadership. We can make a very simple application of that to modern times. If you want to remain a leader, you better stay sexually moral. Oh, boy, I tell you, how many leaders have gone down because of that one? Girls, gold, and glory. The three G's that sabotage celebrity preachers, and non-celebrity preachers for that matter. I probably should add a note here, is why would Judah, who was the fourth born of Jacob by Leah, why would Judah take over leadership after Reuben had screwed up so badly? Why not the second and third born, namely Simeon and Levi? How did they get skipped over? Well, if you recall, Simeon and Levi had executed a massacre on the people of Shechem, taking revenge on Shechem, the individual's rape of their sister Dinah. And they had to get out of town because of the unpleasantness there, and Jacob was not happy about that. He said, "You have made me odious in the eyes of my neighbors." So that's probably why they didn't take over leadership of the patriarchs. It had devolved, the leadership had devolved to Judah, the fourth born. Now, in this verse, Genesis 35:22, there's a little phrase here at the end of the first sentence, "And Israel heard of it," the "it" being Reuben having sex with his father Jacob's concubine Bilhah, "and Israel heard of it." Now, one of my commentators makes an interesting point, quote, there is, quote, "an empty space here follows in the original text, and a pause in it, denoting perhaps the amazement Jacob was filled with when he heard it, and the great grief of his heart, which was such that he was not able to speak a word. The Septuagint version fills up the space by adding, "and it appeared evil in his sight," which is not in the Masoretic text here, "and it appeared evil in his sight." It's interesting. It's a gap. Israel heard of it. Ooh, gap. Pause. Now, John Gill says, "Jacob no doubt chastised Reuben for what Reuben had done, even though nothing is said about this in the text. I think we can reasonably infer that that's what happened." Now, in this verse, at the end of the verse, Genesis 35:22, the scripture says, "Now there were 12 sons of Jacob." And from now on, they're going to be called the 12 patriarchs. Now, you hear that phrase so much, 12, that you think the 12 is set. Well, actually, it's not, but it's confused by something. One of the patriarchs is Joseph, and he had two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, and sometimes they're listed in with the 12 patriarchs, and Joseph is not. So, well, that adds up to 13, so then you have to omit one of them to end up 12, and so the list aren't standard. We see a list in Deuteronomy 33, one in Ezekiel 48, one in Revelation 12. There's some others, too. So you have to be careful. When you see the 12, you've got to see which 12 are being talked about in each individual instance. We go now to Genesis 35:23-26. "The sons of Leah, Reuben, Jacob's firstborn, then Simeon and Levi and Judah and Issachar and Zebulun, the sons of Rachel, Joseph and Benjamin, and the sons of Bilhah, Rachel's maid, Dan and Naphtali, and the sons of Zilpah, Leah's maid, Gad and Asher. These are the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Padan Aram." Of course, Padan Aram, as I've said many times, is Syria, present-day Syria. Now, this is obviously a summary of the sons and wives and concubines of Joseph. As the NIV Study Bible, John Gill, Adam Clark, Jameson Fawcett, and Brown all say, why is it a summary? Because Benjamin was not born in Canaan. Excuse me, Benjamin was not born in Padan Aram. Genesis verse 26 says, "These are the sons of Jacob who were born to him in Padan Aram." But actually, Benjamin was born in Canaan near Bethlehem at a place called Zelzah. But most of them were born in Padan Aram. So Moses, in writing this, just summarizes and says, "These are all the sons that were born in Padan Aram." He means most of them. Now, the sons are listed in order of their birth to Leah. The first six, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, Judah, and Issachar, and Zebulun. But taken as a whole, the sons are not listed in order. They are arranged under their respective mothers, not in order of their birth. We go down to Genesis 35:27-29. "Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre of Kiriath Arba," that is Hebron, "where Abraham and Isaac had sojourned. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years.
Isaac breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, an old man of ripe age, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. Now at verse 27, Jacob died at the Oak of Mamre, Kiriath Arba, Hebron, but no mention of Rebekah. She had probably already died, and that's why she's probably not mentioned. Now the reason Jacob left where he was at Migdal Eder, the Tower of Migdal, probably right south of Bethlehem, if you look at the road. Hebron is the next major stop going down the road to the south, and so he probably heard that Isaac had died, and he headed to Hebron. And John Gill and Adam Clark both speculate that this was probably not the first time Jacob had been to the Oak of Mamre at Hebron. He had been in Canaan for about 10 years. He'd probably visited his family down there. So Isaac's dead at 180 years. He's going to be buried here at Hebron. Here's what Adam Clark says about Isaac's life, Isaac's character. Quote, he appears to have been generally pious, deeply submissive and obedient. He was rather an amiable and good than a great and useful man. If compared with his son Jacob in the early part of their lives, he appears to great advantage as possessing more sincerity and more personal piety. But if compared with his father Abraham, oh, what a falling off is here. Abraham is the most perfect character under the Old Testament, and even under the New he has no parallel but St. Paul. Isaac, though falling far short of his father's excellences, will ever remain a pattern of piety and filial obedience. Well, I don't know. Abraham gets a lot of grief for twice trying to protect his life by getting Sarah put into a king's harem. Of course, Isaac did too, so if you're going to compare the two. I don't know how people come up with these great comparisons about who's the greatest. I really think that's probably a little subjective. But at any rate, he died at Hebron. Now, Hebron is the burial place of three Old Testament couples. Abraham and Sarah were buried there. Isaac and Rebekah were buried there. And Jacob and Leah were buried at Hebron. Rachel was not buried because she died, as I said, at Zelzah near Bethlehem, as we have seen in a previous audio. Now, this guy Mamre is mentioned, it just says Father Isaac at Mamre. That's the Oak of Mamre. Mamre was a person that owned some land there near Hebron. Mamre was allied with Abraham when Abraham went to fight the kings of Elam. Chedorlaomer was the head of that coalition, if you recall, and the five kings of the valley, Sodom, Gomorrah, Zoar, Admah, Zeboim, they fought against these kings of the valley. Well, Mamre was one of Abraham's allies, assuming it's the same Mamre. Kiriath Arba was the old name that's famous because Kiriath Arba is the northernmost point of the penetration of the Israelites into the Promised Land. They didn't get into the Promised Land. They stopped right there at Kiriath Arba. They couldn't get in because of the report of the spies. There were too many giants in the land. So then they turned east, went south of the Dead Sea. They went up through Moab and Ammon. Moab. Well, they didn't go through Ammon. They went through Moab and then crossed over the Jordan River. If you'll look at Hebron, it is about halfway down, I would say, down the Dead Sea, going from north to south. It's on that same road that runs from Bethel to Ramah to Jerusalem to Bethlehem, and then down on about another 10 miles or so, you get to Hebron. So Isaac died. He's 180 at that time. Jacob was 120, and Joseph was 29. So for a brief time, you have all three of the patriarchs, three of the patriarchs together, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Well, that's not really true. Joseph was 29, but at the time that Isaac died, Joseph was in Egypt, as John Gill says. So Joseph was in Egypt while the funeral was going on. Adam Clark says, quote, it is generally allowed that the death of Isaac is mentioned here out of its chronological order, as several of the transactions mentioned in the succeeding chapters, especially 37 and 38, and that's talking about Joseph, they must have happened during his life, during Isaac's life, but that the history of Joseph might not be disturbed, his death is anticipated in this place. It is supposed that he lived at least 12 years after Joseph was sold into Egypt. So, I'll take that back about Joseph being there. He was 29, but he was down in Egypt. This is according to John Gill, the ages. Now, here's a little factoid of note. The last phrase of verse 29 says, and his, Isaac's, sons, Esau and Jacob, buried him. Well, that shows that they must have truly been reconciled. Remember, Jacob had seen Esau coming back. He offered him all those presents, and Jacob said, fine, we're all friends here. And then, of course, we raised the question, was this just for show, or did they actually mean it in their hearts that they were reconciled? Well, here they were reconciled. They buried Isaac, but of course, a lot of times people come together for funerals just for appearance's sake. They might not have really meant it. I think they were reconciled, in my humble opinion. Ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished chapter 35 of Genesis, verses 16 through 29, which encompassed the deaths of both Rachel and Isaac. Jacob has lost his wife and his father in one chapter. We are now prepared to go to chapter 36. We'll do the whole chapter, verses 1 through 43. It's a genealogy. I always like to pick interesting facts out of the genealogy. I will not read every name to you, of course. And it's a genealogy of Esau, the descendants of Esau. So I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.